Welcome to Convergence. I'm Ellen Taylor alongside Michelle McAloon. This is exciting, Michelle, because this is the first episode of season two of Convergence.
I know. I can't believe it is a whole new season and we have a new look. Yes. We have a new outlook. Still kind of looking at faith and culture, but I think we're going to center around some key elements here. So it should be a great season because it's not like there is nothing to talk about in society these days. So
we did one of the changes from where we were recording last year is you're sitting in the same room with me, at least for a short period of time. So welcome back stateside for a bit.
And believe me, this person is very happy to be back stateside at this point.
We had, we could see you throughout season one and just the frustrations or the challenges you had of living overseas in Germany and just the difference of life during the year of the pandemic and stuff.
And it was. And I tell you, a lot of those differences are based on some very fundamental principles that we understand in the United States. And some of those are what we will explore in the next season about our civil liberties, about where we believe our freedom comes from. And this is what's happening in society today, I think, is where do those freedoms come from? Do they come from God? Do they come from the state? And I just left Germany where all liberty comes from the government. And that is so antithetical to the way we think in America and the way the Constitution is constructed. So it's not a small thing.
No, it is. And there's a lot of layers to that that hopefully we're going to take on as we get through season two. We've got some great subject matter ahead. But I wanted to bring in a voice to share this conversation with because I call him the voice of reason in Montgomery, Alabama. Our guest coming in a moment is Tom Riello. You may, if you're listening to this show on Archangel Radio, you are familiar with Tom Riello's voice. He is the co-host of Water Cooler Catechism that airs here in Mobile on Archangel Radio, as well as in Montgomery, Alabama on WMGY. He also hosts a Bible study on YouTube. Just Google Tom Riello. He welcomes you in every week for that. And his main hat he wears, too, is he's training up young minds in theology at Montgomery Catholic Preparatory School. So welcome in, Tom Riello.
Hi, Ellen and Michelle. It is great to be with you on Convergence. I'm excited.
We're excited.
He is. he was one of our first fans of the show, so we are glad to have him on as a guest.
Hey, you've had some great guests.
Yeah. Well, we're adding you to the list now.
Our repertoire of guests, of great guests.
I bring the talent level down, though, a little bit.
I don't think so.
Tom, what I love about talking to you is that you have a very authentic way of putting things in place. It could be the Italian New Yorker in you, but you get right to the point, but you say things with honesty and clarity. And that's not often heard in today's conversations on some of these subjects we're going to tackle. How do you get there? You just kind of see it and say it? Is that what makes you move?
You know, I'm the type of person, and I grew up in a family of six boys, and I grew up in the New York City metropolitan area. And typically when people ask you how you're doing, you're going to tell them. So New Yorkers have a tendency to be a little bit blunt. And so I like to call it as I see it. And, I think one of the problems I think that we run into is the danger of what I call the bella figura-ness of Christianity, right?
Ruh-roh, big word.
It's gotta look good. Everything's got to look good. And we should do things decently and with decorum, but sometimes we have to call things the way they are. And so I like to think that I'm willing to say, yeah, this is not good, and here's why, and you need to know why it's not good.
Well, you know what Tom does, Ellen, is he takes the big and puts it down into the small. So what does that mean? So we have these big national controversies, a lot of them driven by social media, but he helps us see what it looks like in the real world on the ground. And that is really important element of it, because is it just a cyber conversation or is it a conversation that is actually happening and infecting the community? And with Tom Riello being both a catechist and a teacher in high school and with the youth, I think that's a really important element that he has.
High praise, Tom, indeed.
Pressure's on now.
There we go.
You also, living up in Montgomery, Alabama, you get to cross paths with a lot of people that travel in and out of the area that are in the military. And so you get a kind of a broad picture. I like, you know, if our listeners are listening to this outside of Alabama, there's a wide range of voices in this state now. It's probably not your grandfather's Alabama anymore. And so when you encounter people like that, you're kind of getting big city ideas coming your way. What kind of dynamic has that lent to the conversations you have?
Well, you know, I think one of the things about Montgomery, and this surprises people, I think, outside of Montgomery, even people in the state of Alabama, Montgomery, of the four large cities in Alabama, you think in terms of Mobile, Montgomery, Birmingham, and Huntsville, Montgomery is the most indebted to an outside influx coming in and coming out. So, for example, you have two major Air Force bases here, you know, Maxwell Air Force Base. And as it was put to me when I first moved here, anybody who's anybody in the United States Air Force has passed through Montgomery, Alabama, at least twice, if not three times in their career. Because outside of the Air Force Academy, you have the Maxwell Air Base, which has multiple places of learning, advanced learning for Air Force officers. And then, of course, you have the Hyundai car, you know, the plants, you have the various things that are associated with that. So we also have a very large South Korean population. You know, if you want a good Korean meal, you come to Montgomery, Alabama. It's pretty impressive. And so I think that surprises people. And when you're dealing with those two, you know, indicators, they're in and out. A lot of the people that come in from Hyundai, they're in for about 2 or 3 years, and then they go back to South Korea. With the military, you're here for 12 months or 24 months. Really long time is 36 months, and then you're on to somewhere else. So we're getting a new infusion, but that also means we have a lot of people that leave. So things are always constantly on an ebb and a flow. It's hard to really build a solid foundational point of departure. Unlike Mobile, like even just going down to Mobile and spending time in Mobile, you can feel the difference in the two cities.
Yes, you can.
It is so true.
Yes, you can. But, you know, there's problems. There's problems mm-hmm. in society now. Mm-hmm. And we see how communities evolve around these problems. And I'd throw a net out, and I would say these problems are about the human identity of the person, or mm-hmm. the identity of the human person. Age old argument that we've now circled back around, and the church is better equipped to answer this than any other institution in society. Education, pornography, even the church itself is a point of controversy now. What are some of the other issues? Civil liberties, rights.
Right. Tom, one of the challenges we have is these issues that are big on the national stage or even the international stage, and how they trickle down to our local communities, and how do we respond to them? I mean, those are challenges, because sometimes we can go home and look at the TV and go, wow, things are bad out there. Sure, glad I don't live there. Or, you know, we don't have those same issues on a local level. But yet I can imagine in many conversations you have with young people, as well as people internationally, that they're affecting us, but we're not really living within them. And so how do we manage the discussions of them on the big stage? And then how does it affect us on our small neighborly stages?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that we always have to keep in mind is the fact that we just didn't get here, right? We're not here today just because something changed in the last election. This has been a trajectory that we've been moving in. One of the things that I see my job is doing is, I call it the broken windows policy. Giuliani, when he became the mayor of New York City, he inherited a mess, a city that had been losing significant influence in the country and in the world. People didn't want to travel there. They didn't want to go there. People didn't want to invest there. And so things were transitioning, moving to San Francisco and Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, there was a time there where it looked like San Francisco and Charlotte would pass New York City as in banking, which would have been unheard of, you know, 20 years prior. And so Giuliani came in and he said, you know what, I'm going to put a cop on a beat. I'm going to focus on these broken windows. I'm going to focus on the squeegee cleaners. And before long, within 24 months, New York became the safest large city in America. And forget it, right? Had grown for, you know, 20 years ever since that point in the early 90s. Well, you take something as innocuous as spring break, even the language spring break, and you've already lost the war. You don't even know it. That's what makes it so dangerous. So 35 years ago, it would have been anathema that in the city of Montgomery or in the city of New York or anywhere, that during this time we call Easter, you would be in school. Everybody would have been off from school. I went to a public school in the New York City metropolitan area. Easter time, you were off from school. You also got off of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And if you were Muslim and, you know, you had Ramadan and you needed some days off, it wasn't a problem. Okay. Slowly but surely, in about 20, 25 years ago, in the Bible Belt, the buckle of the Bible Belt, spring break became part of the lexicon. And no longer did you have off around Easter time or any of that. No. You went to school at Easter time. You went to school on the Alabama High School Athletic Association schedules games on Holy Thursday and Good Friday and state championships. People got to realize you've already lost when you allow that to happen. But we don't. And see, that's the frog in the water. And so people say, oh, slippery slope arguments are terrible. They only say that because they really do want to bring things down that slippery slope. You think of Obergefell. In 2015, all we heard for 4 or 5 years leading up to that was, we just want to have the right to be married like you. Okay, so the Supreme Court comes in and says, now you have a right to marriage. You can't define marriage merely between a man and a woman. It can be defined between a man and a man and a woman and a woman. Did that put an end to the conversation about sexuality in America? No. Now they're pushing it down, right? The ink wasn't even dry from Justice Roberts' signature about the decision. And they were already talking about transsexuals and transitioning and male sports and female sports. I mean, they are so much better at us at dealing with these cultural battles. And I'm not really sure why that is. And so I see my job and I see the job of what everybody does over there at Archangel Radio and what you and Michelle are doing, Ellen. And that's our job, is to awaken within the people who hear us that there is a real battle on our hands. And it's not easy to do because people don't want to be seen as alarmist, but sometimes you need somebody shouting the alarm.
I don't know, Tom. I don't know if it's a cultural battle. I think for Catholics, it's always evangelizing what is right. So that cultural battle, if we pose ourselves in that cultural battle, we will always lose, because what we are trying to battle against is going back to where we were before. I think reframing the battle, or even reframing those words to, we have to evangelize in the moment now. So the future could perhaps be better, where human beings can flourish more. The problem is, looking back, we are always going to lose. We have to now really look forward. So how do we bring Easter into, how do we make it real into people's lives, spring break or not? I think our path lies in a future and not looking back. Am I making myself clear?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. But I do think it's important for us to know a little bit of the past as to why we're where we are today.
Yeah. History
and
teaches us much.
We got away with things, I think, 20 or 30 years ago, because there was a borrowed patrimony from the culture, mm-hmm. and that's not there.
Right? Ding, ding, ding. And that's so, what I'm talking about, Tom.
Yeah.
How did that happen? And I think really how it happened is exactly what you're talking about. Father J. Scott Newman is one of my favorite priests. He's a priest in the Diocese of Charleston in South Carolina. He's the pastor of St. Mary's in Greenville, South Carolina. And Father J. Scott Newman said the church has done a pretty good job at sacramentalizing, catechizing, but she has failed miserably at evangelizing. And I think that's so true. right? You think in terms of what we are called to do as Catholics. We are not merely called to checkbox our faith. And I think the referendum here is the fact that checkbox Catholicism will always lose. Because when you checkbox the faith, you wind up reducing the faith. You wind up reducing the person of Christ. And the person of Christ cannot be reduced, right? Christ calls me to himself. I'm not inspired to die for some rule or regulation, but I am inspired to give my life for a person. And that's what we have lost sight of, right? In terms of somebody like myself who has spent a number of years with sacramental prep, it is a very sobering time to be a part of sacramental prep because you will get many families who will ask you, how little can my child do and still get the sacrament? And that's not a caricature. That's real. And so when that's the optic of the person's faith, you know that they risk having a faith that has an expiration date. So our job in the church, and I think especially amongst the bishops and the priests and the lay people who assist the church in that is, and Archangel Radio does a great job of this, how do we awaken the faith within our people? How do we help them to encounter Christ in a more authentic and vital way? That's the question I ask myself every day. How do I help my students? How do I help those I come in contact with? How do I help my children, my wife, have an authentic encounter with the person of Christ every day?
So if I'm listening to the two of you speak, it's a focus on what we can do with the people around us to change. It seems to me, though, we've got a big part of the culture and population. You called it, what was it, where the carryover effect from the past. And so what's happened is, I almost fear we're going to get in a Catholic bubble. Like, oh, those are the Catholics. They're okay to do their little thing because they're in the bubble. How are we going to insert this type of authentic relationship back out to the greater world, which, I mean, you turn on the news. There doesn't seem to be anyone that cares about Jesus Christ on the news.
I got one word.
What?
Lay people.
Okay.
The church used to be run mm-hmm. and used to be dependent on the bishops and the priest. And we need the bishops and the priest. They are sacramentally, we need them. We absolutely have to have them. But evangelism lays on the shoulders of the lay people, of the lay person. It is not up to the bishop. It is not up to the priest anymore. How Christianity is lived in society belongs to the lay person alone. I think of Tom Riello. Tom, mm-hmm. hi. Yeah. Tom Riello, I think of you as the ultimate now in lay people, strong lay people, strong contacts with lay people, with lay families, being the man that's saying, no, you're not going to do this sacramentally skinny, you know, conversion. It is a full conversion to Jesus Christ that belongs your whole life. Everything that you are comes to Jesus Christ, and it is a lay person now that is at the forefront. Mm-hmm. And that is how we keep it from becoming a Christian bubble.
Mm-hmm. Tom?
I think it's both and. I think exactly what Michelle said, and I think it's that collaboration that we do with our priest, right? Father can't get into the highways and byways like you and I can.
That's true.
And we have that opportunity. But we work together toward that end. And I also think we have to recognize, you know, somebody we mentioned in the past, Rod Dreher's book, The Benedict Option. And I do think that sometimes what has to happen is we do need to concentrate our efforts because sometimes we could be spread so thin, we have no real impact. Think in terms of political impact. In the New York metropolitan area, one of the largest concentrated areas in the world of the Hasidim community, you have a stone's throw away from where I grew up. Okay? Mm-hmm. The Hasidim community is a very interconnected community. They work together and they support each other. And so their impact is way oversampled because they're all working together. They're not working against each other. One of the tragedies, and Father Carucci once pointed this out, he said, make no mistake about it. It has always been the political goal of the powers that be to put Catholics in charge of certain things. For example, with the whole contraception mandate from the HHS, that was purposely put in place by a Catholic. So the Catholic turns against the Catholic. How many Catholics in public spheres have turned against the church on fundamental issues that are not specifically Catholic? They're human. The issue of abortion, the issue of marriage, these are human issues. Even as Pope Francis has said, abortion is first a human problem before it ever is a Catholic problem. But what has happened, right? You put Catholics in those positions, and so we wind up balkanizing each other instead of actually working together. And I think we have to recognize that in order for us sometimes to be more of what God is calling us to be, we should find ourselves connected in places where we can work together for the good. I'm not a big fan. 20 years ago, I was a big fan of like, well, that parish is, they're a little wacky. And well, you know, try to get on the parish council. You know what? I think sometimes you gotta grow where you're planted, but you also sometimes have to lift the plant up and go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So I think both and, because I have been in situations like that where you've tried to fix problems from within and give it a shot, but sometimes it just doesn't work out and you need to really find where you can be most productive. If you want to help lead an RCIA program or lead some kind of adult faith formation and the pastor doesn't want that or has no interest in it and you've approached him, well, then maybe you need to prayerfully consider finding another place where you can use your gifts to assist the church. I think we have to realize that, because too often we get balkanized and it becomes a real problem.
Well put. And I do think that we were inclined to think anything Catholic was always for the good and had the same perhaps right. desires that we might have as a Catholic. And then you wander into some Catholic spheres and you realize, oh, well, that doesn't really seem that Catholic. I think you have that in Christian circles in general.
In general, I think so.
Don't you?
I think almost Austin Roos has a book out, No Funner Time to Be a Catholic, Under Siege. And one of the great things I think we have now is the person that is sitting in the pew is what we're going to see is trying to be an authentic Catholic. No one's having to check the box anymore, unless they're doing it with their family. But culturally, there's no pressure to be Catholic.
Oh, to be at Mass on Sunday morning.
To be at Mass, to be Catholic. So the people that are now have their backside in the pew, I believe what we're going to see is a more authentic, more fervent church. It may be smaller, but you have to remember, when this church started out, it started out with a fever. It started out with small groups of people coming together, home churches. And maybe that is what we are returning to in so many ways, not home churches, but more.
And Pope Francis spoke about that, almost a decade ago, or maybe even more, that, the future of the church is going to be probably smaller, but authentically Catholic.
Authentically Catholic. Yeah. And I think we are. I think there's no funner time to be Catholic right now.
Right.
Because, I think our fight is very clear. We understand not necessarily what we have to do sometimes, but we understand what we are up against in many ways.
And who we have to be.
Yeah.
Who we have to be in church and who we have to be out of church. It's the same person.
It's the same person.
Yeah.
Right. We may not know what to do, but you know what? By being that same person, what to do is a secondary question.
Mm-hmm. Recently, Archbishop Rohde touched on this in his homily at the Chrism Mass. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he mentioned in there was how, as Catholics, we have the reason to come back to church, and how non-Catholic Christians, they're not necessarily hampered by the fact that they can't go to church at a particular building at a particular time, because a lot of what they do can just transition very easily over to a live stream. But for the Catholic, that's not the case. And he said, we, you know, we have as Catholics the impetus to come back to Mass. But then he added this, provided we believe in the Eucharist. And I think that's the key thing, right? It's exactly what you both are saying. People today that are in Mass, most of them are there because they want to be there, because there is no more real cultural support to being Catholic. There really is no more a checking the box of being Catholic, and I would even dare say of being Christian. And I think this will play to our favor, because the people that are in our midst, they are going to want to be catechized. They're going to want to be encouraged in their faith and deepen the roots of their faith. And I think as that happens, as you mentioned, when he was still Father Ratzinger, he said the future of the church will reside with these small creative minorities, where the faith will intensify amongst this group of faithful. And then, as you said, Michelle, it doesn't take much. You know, the Lord established an amazing thing with very few people. I think he was down to 11 apostles. They had to get that 12th one in, Matthias, and then a handful of others, about 55 others. We got about 70 in that upper room. And what happened, right? Before long, the Romans woke up and said, where'd these people come from? Mm-hmm. And so why not us? Father Victor Ringels talks about that. Why not us? Why not just the Catholic world in the United States, but why not the state of Alabama, the Diocese of Birmingham, and the Archdiocese of Mobile? Why not we be the next Ireland? You know, we're about 4.5 million people in our state. Ireland's about 4.5 million people as a country. Well, why not use us, Lord, to bring about the revitalization of the faith? We have to believe. We have to be fools for Christ. And I think that's the key thing that we have to focus on.
Tom, you set us on fire, brother.
Some of the things we're going to talk about, the Supreme Court coming up, the digital world and our
press,
impact.
Communications, yeah. Education, transsexuality. You want to throw anything else in there?
Well, we've got a packed season ahead, and we're glad that Tom Riello, you were able to join us and kind of set the pathway as we step forward in faith here and talk about these issues of faith and culture.
Nothing more privileged than to be able to share the faith once for all delivered to the saints. Mm-hmm. And the more Catholics that come to recognize that great privilege that we have been given, the more we will set the world on fire.
Amen.
Got that.
Amen.
Tom Riello, thanks for joining us today. Michelle, I look forward to seeing you here for a little bit longer.
I do too.
I'm sure halfway through season two, she's going to be complaining about lockdowns again.
Yes, you know I will. There we go.
For Michelle McAloon, I'm Ellen Taylor. Thanks for joining us today on Convergence.